How's everybody doing this week? Welcome back to another episode of The Banker Next Door. I am your host, Dr. Joe Berquist, and this is our flagship show, the weekly banking update. And I thank everyone so much for joining me here again this weekend. Not as many episodes this weekend. I basically posted an interview with Greg Smith, who is the curriculum director at the Stonier Graduate School of Banking, a school that I am currently a teacher at and a school that I graduated from back in 2014. I'm kind of wearing my Stonier shirt with pride here this weekend, as it were. It's a little kind of a little unofficial Stonier weekend for me, but the official Stonier weekend will be coming up the first week in June, I think June 6th through the 12th, and I'll be hopefully bringing you guys some really good reports while I'm down there kind of on site at the Stonier campus. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, the interview that I did with Greg is all about, if you don't know anything about Stonier, have never heard about the Stonier Graduate School of Banking, or maybe if you're just interested in understanding a little bit more about the demographics, the curriculum, the logistics, all that stuff. It's all there in the episode. So I highly recommend it. Great interview with Greg Smith. I thank him immensely for doing that one with me. So go check out that video. And then I also posted part 9 of the Lords of Easy Money. So if we cover chapter 8 in this week's episode on that. So definitely go check that out. People have really been loving that series so far. And before we get into our numbers, I just wanted to mention the passing of a giant in the world of economics, Daniel Kahneman. Daniel Kahneman, I think to a lot of people, some people might even describe him as the godfather of what's known as behavioral economics. Daniel Kahneman was a psychologist, and he wrote this monumental book called Thinking Fast and Slow. And this was not only a classic book and a New York Times bestseller, but this also got him the Nobel Prize for economics for writing this book. And Daniel Kahneman had a longtime collaborator who worked with him for, I think, a few decades, who unfortunately passed away and did not collaborate with Daniel Kahneman on this particular book. He collaborated with him on some other books, but Kahneman talks about him a lot in the intro of the book, really talks about their friendship, a lot of the research that they did, which ultimately led to him being able to write this book. And so you know, he's very much alive and represented in this book. You can kind of feel that, but definitely a huge loss for the economics world, as Daniel Kahneman really had become kind of a giant in that world. I'm a huge fan of a lot of the work that he did in the realm of behavioral economics. And I could get in. I mean, we could talk for hours and hours about a lot of the things that he espoused and the theories and different things that he represented. But a lot of the stuff just makes a lot of sense. It's just, you know, human nature, how people deal with money, the weird things that people do as it relates to money. And so I highly recommend it. I mean, people just go and check it out. But like I said, I just wanted to make a mention of his passing. So where are we with everything here? And again, right before we get into the numbers and stuff this week, we had inflation this week that really came back, or I shouldn't say came back, but is hanging strong. It's not going down, you know, just as I basically said that it would not go down until the government spending really got under control. And, you know, we're running $2 trillion federal deficits at this point. The national debt is just spiraling out of control. And, until that gets under control, the inflation is just the idea that you're going to get inflation down to 2% is a pipe dream. It's just it's not going to happen. So inflation is staying high. You still have a jobs market that, at least as per the headline, is strong. GDP, again, as per the headline, is strong. So where does that leave the Federal Reserve? Well, that really gives the Fed absolutely no reason to cut rates. I mean, if the economy is still humming along and GDP is good and the employment is good and inflation still hasn't come back down to 2%, there is literally no reason for the Fed to cut rates. And so, and you will see that in a minute here, that the Fed is kind of standing pat and, you know, and they're, you know, so the question becomes, you know, are we going to get any rate cuts this year? I mean, I think pretty much any cuts before June are basically off the table at this point. I mean, we're not going to see anything here in the second quarter. I do not believe we're going to see any rate cuts this year, unless something really happens, unless the economy really turns and there is a major event which causes the economy to turn, perhaps a major war, perhaps World War III breaking out. And I'm not joking about that. Perhaps World War III breaking out, perhaps something else happening that would give the Fed some kind of cover to then make those cuts that they've been looking at. So we'll have to see. Again, we'll have to see how they're playing out. But my right now, if everything just stays as it is, I don't think, again, that the Fed has no rationale for cutting rates. They just don't. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what's going on. I got a lot of good stuff here to cover this week. So, all right, so let's get into it. And let's start off with what's coming up for next week. Okay, so we got on Monday, we got core retail sales. And then we also have retail sales for March. We have the New York Empire State Manufacturing Index all coming out Monday. On Tuesday, we get building permits, housing starts, industrial production. We get the API weekly crude oil stock. On Wednesday, we get the 20-year Treasury bond auction and we get the beige book. And on Thursday, we get continuing jobless claims, initial jobless claims, Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Index, and we get existing home sales. So we got a lot of real estate data next week, get some retail data. We got a 20-year bond auction. We've got, what else we got? We got a little bit of unemployment data with the continuing jobless claims. We get a little bit of, we get the New York and the Philly Fed manufacturing indexes. So we'll get a little bit more about manufacturing. So some good economic data coming out this week. And so let's hit some of the headline managers and things, or headlines that are going on here. So, okay, asset managers, including Federated Hermes, Inc., Capital Group, and Vanguard, Inc., are planning to close or convert institutional prime money market funds, collectively worth over $220 billion, into another type of fund before the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission starts imposing mandatory fees on large redemptions in early October, the Financial Times reported, citing the company's executives. In July 2023, the SEC voted to impose a new rule aimed at preventing rapid outflows from money market funds. So that's kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on there. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corp, the FDIC, in a report detailed how it intends to use authorities under Title II of the Dodd-Frank Act, particularly focus on resolving U.S.-based globally systemic important banking organizations in case they fail. FDIC Chairman Martin Goonberg presented the report during an event at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, saying that the agency favors a single point of entry, SPOE, resolution strategy where only one legal entity, the parent holding company, is placed into resolution. Very interesting timing on that, wouldn't you say? I mean, why all of a sudden would they be looking at that now? You know, and so the head of the FDIC, he's over, not here, he's over at the Institute for International Economics. And he's given this speech on how, well, when we take over a bank, we prefer the single entry point entry resolution strategy where we're just going to use the parent company or the holding company is placed into resolution. Kind of interesting that the place and timing of this. Keep an eye on that one. New York Community Bank Corp raised its deposit interest offer for customers of its online arm, My Banking Direct, to 5.55% a year, the highest rate offered by a U.S. bank for a savings account, CNBC reported. An analyst who tracks rates for deposit accounts website, the standout rate could be a sign that NYCB is facing funding pressure, so the bank is trying really hard to attract deposits. So I guess if you need a CD right now, go check out New York Community Bank because they got 5.55%. And that's through their online arm, My Banking Direct. So, you know, it might be worth checking out, but I'm sure that the customer's trust, as it were, has been dramatically shaken and people are very reluctant to just dive back in and start putting their money back into that bank until they see perhaps a little bit more concrete evidence of a strong turnaround there. Wall Street banks, including JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs, helped push return to office rate in New York City to almost 80% of pre-pandemic levels. A rebound also seen in Miami, Bloomberg News reported. The two East Coast cities had the highest RTO rates among seven major U.S. markets in 2023, above the national average of about 63%. I gotta call that one into question, because I actually just saw an article saying that New York City had the worst return to office rates, and that the basically New York City offices were empty. So I don't know. That's an interesting one there, and I'll have to keep an eye on that. I'll see if I could find that other article for you guys, and maybe report on that in another episode. So, or come back next week. As non-banks overcame U.S. banks in directly lending to companies in the first half of 2023, the pattern sharply reversed this year, as nearly $12 billion worth of financing previously from direct lenders were refinanced in the first quarter through so-called broadly syndicated loan market, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing PitchBook LCD, a channel dominated by banks. So big year-over-year jumps in loan syndication and debt underwriting fees are cooking up for banks, the report said, citing data from Autonomous Research. As Wall Street banks reclaimed deals lost to private creditors in the first quarter, private credit funds are now sweetening terms and cutting pricing, significantly dropping charges below the usual 6 to 7 percentage points above base rate, Bloomberg News reported. So that's kind of interesting. So these alternative lenders, if you will, were sucking up a lot of those deals in 2023, and now it's kind of flipping back over to the banks. But the alternative lenders, private creditors, if you will, are kind of sweetening the terms by cutting pricing and dropping fees, trying to maintain that business. So keep an eye on that. Uniswap Labs, the main developers of the world's largest decentralized exchange protocol, Uniswap, received a Wells notice from the U.S. SEC notifying the company that it plans to sue it for allegedly operating an unregistered exchange and broker-dealer. The company has for a while been reportedly under probe by the SEC. So something to keep an eye on there. Cryptocurrency exchanges Binance, Coinbase, and Kraken, officially named Payward Inc., intend to invest more and bring in more people to upgrade their compliance controls and move on from their costly settlements with U.S. regulators, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing the company's compliance executives at a conference in New York. Let's see here. Two banks, Bedminster, New Jersey-based PPAC Gladstone Financial Corp, and Hopagi, New York-based Dime Community Bank Shares, announced that they have cumulatively hired at least 16 teams of bankers from New York Community Bank subsidiary Flagstar Bank, while PPAC hired 10 teams of commercial and private bankers. Dime hired 6 deposit-focused groups from Hicklesville, New York-based subsidiary. This represents about 12% of the 134 NYCB private client teams, most of whom came to the organization from Legacy Signature Bank, said Piper Sandler analyst Mark Fitzgibbon in an April 9th note. Fitzgibbon further wrote that the bank is expected to exercise legal options to stop the poaching of its prized teams. New York Community Bank has not seen its deposits fluctuate since the recent exits and has reassigned client accounts to current employees, American Banker reported. A recently released report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office, GAO, indicated that Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and First Republic Bank had increased their advances from their respective federal home loan banks by 37% to 50% in the first 2 weeks of March 2023, when SVB and Signature Bank failed. First Republic Bank's outstanding advances then largely stabilized until the bank failed on May 1st. The GAO report said that the three banks each held substantially more Federal Home Loan Bank advances as a proportion of their total assets than a group of 16 commercial bank peers as of the end of 2022. So that's very interesting. And I actually have that GAO report right here. And I'm not going to get to it this week, but or I'm not to get into it this weekend, but next this week coming up, I will do a separate episode on that Gao report and bring a little bit more detailed information there. And if you want more information on the failure of these three banks, go check out the crypto series that I've done, particularly episode 4, which was the banking crisis of 2023, if you want more information on the more specific information on the failure of these banks. So, okay. Banks are slashing interest rates they pay for deposits, even though the Federal Reserve is yet to implement rate cuts, American Banker reported. Online lenders such as Ally Financial and Discover Financial Services have recently lowered the rates they pay on high-yield savings accounts to 4.25%, and traditional branch-based banks have also started lowering rates paid on certificates of deposit, the report added. So that's very interesting. So the Federal Reserve hasn't even cut rates yet, yet banks are already starting to reduce the CD rates and rates they're probably paying out on savings accounts as well. I would keep an eye on that, because if the short-term treasuries and the long-term treasuries continue to, if that yield curve continues to steepen a little bit and continues to head back to a closer to a positive territory, in other words, going back to reinverting, they might have to reverse course on this, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens there. Citigroup investors have welcomed CEO Jane Fraser's recent overhaul of the bank, but are wary of future challenges such as regulatory issues, lackluster earnings, and an unsettled workforce, Reuters reported. So I guess the sugar high of dumping 60,000 employees within 6 months, I guess that's kind of wearing off there a little bit. The U.S. SEC delayed its decision until May 29th on the proposed rule change sought by Intercontinental Exchange Inc. unit, NYSE American LLC, which would permit the listing and trading of options on the Bitwise Bitcoin ETF, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, and any trust holding Bitcoin, pensions, and investments reported, citing an April 8th SEC release. So the U.S. SEC is delaying its decision on whether or not these guys can roll out, I guess, these ETFs. So see what happens with that. This is big. The usage of the Fed's overnight reverse purchase agreement facility has declined by about $1.75 trillion since June of 2023, with the facility's funds settling around $440 billion, near the lowest level since 2021, Bloomberg News reported. That is major. I'm going to do a whole episode on showing different charts here on the repo market, and this is critical to understand this. Like what's happening in the repo market is huge, because this is the liquidity which basically runs the overall economy. So you got to understand that the drop and the reverse repo purchases is basically like liquidity in the market. The liquidity in the market is drastically drying up. It's gone down by $1.75 trillion since June of 2023, and it's now down to about $440 billion. If that gets down close to zero, you're going to have a problem. So, okay. All right, let's see what else we got here. Just trying to see. All right, let's move on to some other stuff here. Okay, so let's hit some other highlights. Producer prices rise at slower pace in March. The producer price index increased at a seasonally adjusted 0.2% in March, following a 0.6% increase the month before. The PPI is up 2.1% over the previous 12 months, the largest annual increase since a 2.3% gain in April of 2023. Consumer price increases accelerated in March. The consumer price index increased a seasonally adjusted 0.4% in March, following a 0.4% increase in February. The labor market said the index is up 3.5% over the past year, up from a 3.2% annual gain the month before. Increases in shelter and gasoline prices accounted for more than half of the monthly increase. Data not improving Fed confidence in inflation as per their minutes. Really, it's a shocking. Recent data has not increased the FOMC members' confidence that inflation was moving substantially down to 2%. Participants generally noted their uncertainty about the persistence of high inflation, with some pointing to geopolitical risks to supply chains and energy prices as upside risks. So what did I say? What did I say about interest rates at the very beginning? They said geopolitical risks and supply chains and energy prices. So if you have a major war breakout, that's a major geopolitical risk. And that would dramatically hurt supply chains and energy prices. So the moral of the story there is inflation is not coming down. Inflation is actually beginning to spike back up a little bit. And the Fed is not sure what to do here. So, okay. ICBA to Congress, climate rules and emerging threat. The Securities and Exchange Commission's final rule requiring climate-related investor disclosures and related agency efforts are an emerging threat to community banks and their customers, ICBA told Congress. Yes, I would agree with that. OCC extends comments letter on merger proposal. So the OCC extended from April 15th to June 15th the comment deadline on its proposal to update its rules on bank mergers. The proposal would change OCC rules on business combinations involving national banks and federal savings associations and add a new policy statement to clarify the OCC's review of applications under the Bank Merger Act. FDIC reaffirms mega bank resolution authority. The FDIC released a report on how the agency would manage the orderly resolution of a large complex financial company under Title II of the Dodd-Frank Act, which I had mentioned earlier. This one has to take the cake as under infuriating comments of the week. So Michael Hughes, who is the acting controller of the OCC, encourages outreach to new Americans. The OCC encourages banks to pursue opportunities to serve new Americans, not illegal immigrants that just came into the country, but new Americans. So they benefit from the U.S. financial system. This is called the Biden administration trying to embed all the illegal immigrants they just let into the country. Sorry if people don't like that, but that's the truth. That really makes me mad. I'm just going to blow over that one. So ICBA continues challenging legal push on data furnishers. So ICBA and other groups filed a friend of the court brief rebutting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's continued assertions that consumer reporting agencies are furnishers and obligated to settle legal disputes. So there's a whole lawsuit going on right now around this right now. And so they filed an amicus brief, which is a friend of the court brief. The ICBA and other groups said that the FCRA requires CRAs and furnishers to investigate the factual accuracy of reported information, as in previous briefs and related cases. The groups urged the court to reject the theory that the law also requires credit bureaus and data furnishers to determine the legal validity of claims between creditors and debitors. Now, this is a major problem because basically what's happening is credit reporting agencies are just removing things, like removing judgments and liens and other things that are going on there that they should not be removing. Because I guess they're just determining that they're frivolous or don't really matter or shouldn't be on people's credit reports. So that's a problem, and that's something we'll have to continue to keep an eye on. So Treasury repeats call for new authorities to target crypto crime. The Treasury Department reiterates its calls for Congress to grant the department additional tools to address illicit actors' use of cryptocurrencies to facilitate crime. Yeah, okay, that's a good one. Small Biz Optimism Index, the lowest since 2012. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Index decreased by 0.9 in March to 88.5, the lowest level since December of 2012. This is the 27th consecutive month below the 50-year average of 98, with inflation ranking as the top business problem. Community banker confidence improves in quarter one as per the index. Community bankers are slightly more confident in future economic conditions, but still have concerns, especially about regulatory burden, according to the latest Community Bank Sentiment Index from the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. Reported on that. Expectations. Okay, let's see here. Consumer credit rises 3.4% in February. Economy adds 303,000 jobs in March. Yeah, we'll I'll get more in depth in that. I'll do another episode on the jobs report, breaking that down. Basically, the moral of the story there was all the jobs were part-time jobs. We lost full-time jobs, and the majority of jobs went to foreign-born workers. All right, let's see here. What else we got? We already covered that. Okay, let's hit some articles here real quick before we wrap up. So, default risk broadly ticks higher across most U.S. sectors. So default risk ticked higher for companies with publicly traded stocks in the U.S. across most sectors at the end of the first quarter. Loan and deposit betas diverged as banks look for bottom in margins. So delayed rate cuts have pushed out hopes for lower deposit costs, and data from the fourth quarter of 2023 showed the potential for asset yield and liability cost shifts to disappoint. So in other words, you know, banks' margins are beginning to get squeezed here, and we'll see what a lot of banks are going to start reporting earnings. I think JP Morgan reported a lot more banks will be reporting this week, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. But basically expect margin compression in a lot of the calls, quarterly calls. I would suspect a lot of the bank CFOs and CEOs will be talking about how they're going to expect, you know, margin compression and reduced earnings here throughout the rest of the year. U.S. job growth uneven as government education sectors dominate payroll gains. Yes, that's absolutely right. So most of the government has been in the government and in healthcare, and healthcare is being funded by the government. So there you go. Weakness in the CRE market could create heavier property tax burden for homeowners. Yes. Something that homeowners should make note of. If you are in an area that has a lot of commercial businesses, if you have a lot of office parks and things in your area, a lot of retail, you should be mindful that if a lot of those businesses go out, it could put a heavier tax burden on you to make up the difference. So just something to keep in mind of. FDIC preparing for challenging global systemically important bank resolution. We kind of talked about that earlier. Here's an interesting one. Provident Lakeland's unusual deal approval conditions tell cautionary tale. Now, I'm not going to get into this in depth here, but I'm probably going to do an episode just on this because this merger is very interesting. And the deals that were kind of put in there were very interesting. Jamie Dimon had his annual shareholder letter come out this week. And one of the things in that letter was he actually warns that the U.S. might face an interest rate spike. So JP Morgan chief Jamie Dimon warned that U.S. interest rates could soar to 8% or more in coming years, reflecting the risk that record high deficit spending and geopolitical stress will complicate the fight against inflation. Huge fiscal spending, the trillions needed each year for the green economy, the remilitarization of the world, and the restructuring of global trade are all inflationary. Dimon wrote an annual letter to JP Morgan shareholders released on Monday. Yes, I mean, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I think the bigger thing in the short term is the treasury markets. You know, the government is spending a huge amount of money to buy those treasuries, and they're not going to be able to keep doing that. So as a result, what's going to happen in order to entice people like China and Japan to start buying those treasuries again? What's going to happen? Rates are going to have to rise because there's more risk. So the rates are going to have to go up in order to entice them to start buying our treasuries again. So to me, that is more the short term pressure there. But we'll continue. We'll see. Let's see here. Commercial real estate reserves spike as banks try to get ahead of the problem. So U.S. banks have jacked up commercial real estate credit loss allowance ratios by nearly a third over the past year as they start absorbing losses on office loans and contend with emerging questions about the multifamily sector. So again, something to keep an eye on. Banks have been doing what's called extend and pretend for pretty much the last 6-7 months, and all those loans have gotten pushed into 2024 here, but the rate cuts that they were hoping for have not yet materialized. And so therefore, at some point, they're going to have to start writing off these loans because they're not going to be able to extend and pretend forever. Certificates of deposit concentration at U.S. banks, highest in decades. Yes, because banks have had to put out a lot of CDs to keep deposits where they're at. U.S. corporate bankruptcies picked up pace in March with 59 new filings. Bank investor sentiment fragile as rates shift ahead of the first quarter 24 earnings report. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. U.S. banks set to report soft lending and firming deposits for the quarter one of 2024. U.S. banks trade liquidity pressures for higher credit costs. Yes, liquidity pressure should ease in 2024, but bank managers will face a new headwind in the form of higher credit costs, resulting in a modest hit to earnings, according to the 2024 U.S. bank market report. So kind of what I was just saying about, you know, expect in your quarterly calls what you can kind of expect there from CFOs and CEOs. Strategists brace for spike in U.S. bond yields as economy fails to cool. What I just said. U.S. government bond yields may soon climb toward their recent peak as inflation remains stubbornly above the U.S. Federal Reserve's target. The labor market shows little sign of cracking and expectations for cuts to benchmark interest rates are diminishing. So there you go. So the treasury yields are going to continue to rise. Services elevate U.S. inflation, defying predictions and hindering Fed rate cuts. Yes. The SBA is overhauling its marquee 7A loan program. Community banks are optimistic, more like praying. Most CEOs want to ramp up hiring in 2024, but there are some big roadblocks. Hiring challenges are also faced by small businesses. Wells Fargo sees inflation taking heavy toll on small business optimism. Yes, absolutely. Why half of the new U.S. manufacturing jobs in the next decade could go unfilled. So another thing in the jobs report that just came out, U.S. manufacturing jobs were basically at zero. And this is basically saying that, you know, a lot of these manufacturing jobs in the next decade are going to go unfulfilled. And it basically digital skills, as no surprise, have the highest demand. So, a lot of news, a lot of things going on right now, a lot of things happening in this crazy banking world, crazy world of finance. So I hope everybody got a lot of good information here out of this update here this week. I mean, just a lot of things going on. I'm going to be coming back next week. I was working on a lot of stuff this weekend, but just didn't quite have time to bring some of these things together. But just hang tight. Next week, I'll be back. I might even drop a few episodes during the week if I can. We'll have to see how some of the things work out, see if I can finish polishing a few of these things. But thank you, everybody. Thanks again for hanging out with me for a half hour here while we did our weekly banking update. And I hope to be back again real soon. Please check out some of the other episodes that I mentioned, my interview with Greg Smith and the Lords of Easy Money part nine. Part nine, I think I'm on here. I'm losing track here. But as we keep rolling with that series, please check it out. And please remember that we are on YouTube, Rumble, and all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to like, share, subscribe. That always helps the channel. Please make sure to leave your comments down below. I love getting feedback and commentary from people. It makes me feel ever so good. And just thank you again. Thank you for being a listener. Thank you for checking it out. And I hope to be back again real soon. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And I'll see you again next week. Later.